At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I'm joined by Bill Raggio, my colleague and co-host of the Foundation for Defensive Democracies, a senior fellow, keeps a long war journal, and John Hardy, our Ukraine-Russia watcher for the Foundation for Defensive Democracies, and much more, watching the White House, watching NATO, watching remarks by the President of the United States these last days. John, a very good evening to you. I begin with the story of the tomahawks. A couple of weeks ago at the Valdai Conference in Sochi, Russia, Vladimir Putin took questions about the tomahawks from the press and made it very clear that that was the Russian version of a red line. Do not do this or we'll escalate. That was a couple of weeks ago. Last week, there was reason to believe that Mr. Trump was disposed to releasing some tomahawks to our European allies in NATO, who could then make the decision to direct them to Kyiv, because tomahawks are a long-range strike capability with a large warhead that Kyiv does not have now have in its arsenal, could range across the map of Russia, destroying energy nodes or anything to do with the economy. And now, over the weekend, very clouded, fog of diplomacy. The Financial Times indicates there were voices raised in the meeting between Mr. Zelensky and Mr. Trump. There were other leaders from Kyiv in town to talk about energy and arsenals and the arsenal. At the end, what we had the Financial Times characterizing the meeting as surrender now or else Putin will overrun you from Mr. Trump, and much more diplomatic language from Mr. Zelensky. We're working together. Can you help us understand this gossip, because it certainly is, there's nothing hard about this, and where the tomahawks are in this meeting? Good evening to you.
John, hey, Bill, thanks for having me back on the show. Yeah, so just to kind of set the scene. So going in, actually, Putin had not threatened escalation. The Kremlin had said the tomahawks would be escalatory, but really when asked on this, Putin's definitive statement was, "We'll basically strengthen our air defense posture." And so, he said, it'll hurt U.S.-Russian relations. It'd be kind of a bad omen for our attempts to get those back on track, such as they were. But I don't think the Russians would have responded. Their response, I don't think, would have been different in kind than their response to the previous supplies of other weapon systems to Ukraine, like ATACMS, Storm Shadow, et cetera. So going into the meeting, Trump, of course, had the call with President Putin on the eve of Zelensky's visit to the White House. Putin kind of slightly adjusted his territorial demands. So whereas he had initially started out saying Ukraine must relinquish all of the regions kind of annexed by Russia back in 2022. Then he kind of later moved to saying, okay, just give us the Donbass, we'll freeze in the south. This time, reportedly, and I should caveat that these are just reports, and it's possible that the Trump administration officials are not correctly relaying what was said. That seems to have been issued in the past, but reportedly, Putin said, okay, now if you give us the rest of the Donbass, which we've been unable to take by force, that's my comment there, then the Russians will actually hand back small parts of the Zaporizhia and Kherson regions in southern Ukraine. Still unclear exactly what he meant, or again, if that was relayed correctly. Then in the meeting with Zelensky on Friday, Trump reportedly kind of put forward that position, according to press reports, kind of pressed Zelensky to accede to it, but then ultimately put out a statement advocating a ceasefire along the current lines of control. So really not much change ultimately from what had been the Ukrainian position going in. I think, unfortunately for the Ukrainians, Zelensky had come in wanting to get firm commitments from Trump on a number of issues, including air defense. The press has been most kind of concerned with the Tomahawk missiles. does not seem like he walked away, that Zelensky walked away with those sorts of commitments, at least on the Tomahawks. Trump was publicly kind of walking back from previous statements suggesting he might provide them. I think there is some good news on the kind of the long range strike front, though, in that I think fairly soon, if not already, U.S. supplies of what's called the ERAM, extended range attack munition, should start flowing to Ukraine pretty soon, shorter range than Tomahawk. But I think given the numbers reportedly on offer, it would probably be more impactful than the what would likely be a pretty small number of Tomahawks that the Pentagon would be willing to kind of part with.
Bill, you have a question for John.
John, Zelensky was also looking to purchase 25 Patriot air defense systems. But he also noted that that would take time given orders and whatnot. Is that a realistic ask from Zelensky? Is it possible for the U.S. to provide that and allies to provide that many systems, particularly given the problems that we've encountered in the Middle East with the recent exchange of fire between Israel and Iran and the current attacks on Israel?
Yeah, I think that's kind of a nominal notional number that Zelensky just put out there. I don't think that's in any way realistic within the near future. I think, to my mind, a more important priority than the kind of fire units themselves is having adequate supplies of the interceptor missiles for Ukraine's existing Patriot systems and the ones that will arrive from European countries in the near future. According to reports, Ukraine is pretty low on those supplies of PAC-2 and PAC-3 missiles. And that's a problem given that the Patriot is really Ukraine's only reliable counter against Russian ballistic missile threats that we've seen the Russians use in larger numbers in recent barrages that have knocked out very large, maybe 60% or so, according to Ukrainian officials, of Ukraine's gas production infrastructure. So to my mind, that's kind of the chief priority for air defense.
The Tomahawk has been presented to me as a weapon that would give Kyiv a capability they do not now have, which is to range across the map of Russia and destroy energy nodes, which is the chief source of income that the Pentagon, that the Kremlin has now, gasoline and natural gas to, for example, India and China. Is that accurate to your understanding? Can it hit everything of significance in Russia to do with gasoline, to do with oil?
It has much longer range than the missiles currently in Ukraine's, the Western provided missiles currently in Ukraine's arsenal. The Flamingo, Ukrainian made, reportedly has a bit longer range, but I think it's probably easier to shoot down. That being said, Tomahawks absolutely can get shot down themselves. It's a cruise missile at the end of the day. We've seen the Russians and Ukrainians shoot down cruise missiles at a pretty decent rate in the past. So I think with the Tomahawk, a key question would be how many are provided. And, I obviously don't know the exact number the Pentagon is planning on, if Trump does give the order. I would think it's a fairly small number. So to my mind, it might make most sense to target defense industrial sites Ukraine has struck in the past with drones that carry larger or smaller warheads, but those smaller warheads tend to not do as much damage. So maybe you can serve your limited number of Tomahawks if they do arrive for those types of targets, and then use the more plentiful drones against things like energy infrastructure that it's not like a big massive concrete plant that's really hard to cripple. It's things that probably a bit easier to take out, at least temporarily, while the repairs are underway.
I want to make sure I understand this, John. Adding the Tomahawk to Kyiv's arsenal, would it be an upgrade like going from bows and arrows to a rifle, or would it just be a stronger and longer range rifle from a rifle?
It would, I think, add range on top of Ukraine's existing Western provided missiles. It packs more punch than Ukraine's Ukrainian made drones, and it's a more capable, kind of harder to shoot down missile than what Ukraine is currently making at that kind of same range class. But you know, I don't think it's kind of like a wonder weapon that's going to turn the tide of the war. I think it'd be a useful addition to Ukraine's growing arsenal of long range strike capabilities. You know, I've been generally supportive of saying that the Trump administration should do all it can to enhance Ukraine's long range strike capabilities. Tomahawk could be part of that solution. There are also practical considerations and stockpile considerations for the United States. And I think ultimately Tomahawk is not the only way that we can do this, accomplish this mission. I mentioned ERAM, there are other missiles,
right,
other things we can do.
Bill, you have a question.
John, the President Trump seems to be softening his support for Ukraine at this point in time. It's very difficult to gauge this, given how he's gone back and forth over time. It's both a war of attrition and a war of territory. In my estimation, the Russians are winning both, not fantastically. What is the best that Ukraine can hope for if Trump continues to soften on support? The Ukrainians can't take back territory. How are they going to get a peace that is lasting here that ensures their survival?
So the way I view the conflict at the present moment is, the Russians have advantages in manpower and materiel. They have generally have strategic initiative across most of the front, but they've been underperforming relative to their advantages and don't really have a ton to show for their ongoing offensive. To me, yeah, I think you're right. Ukraine does not have good prospects for retaking large amounts of territory. We saw what happened in 2023. I think even their more successful Kursk offensive back last year in August, for one, it was against a very weakly defended part of the front. And then ultimately that offensive, while initially successful, did not result in like a strategic collapse for the Russians, did not kind of ultimately change the course of the war very much. So to me, if I'm Ukraine, a good goal is to exhaust the Russian military's offensive potential over time by inflicting disproportionate levels of attrition. I think the Ukrainians are doing that now, and it's a matter of if they can sustain that longer than Russia can sustain its still pretty high level of recruitment. So, Russia's offensive tactics right now rely on just feeding a lot of men into the meat grinder. And so as long as Russia can continue recruiting, 30,000-35,000 troops a month, they can probably sustain that. If those numbers dip and below the level of replacement, then they're going to have a much harder time. And so to me, it's ultimately Trump's support is important. It's to me, ultimately, though, it's going to come down to, Ukrainians, especially their drone units, how many Russians they can kill. Can they adapt to Russian counter-adaptation? That's a battle that kind of war within a war that's ongoing. And I think the Ukrainians right now are doing a pretty good job. We'll see, how the Russians adapt going forward. On Trump, I would just say that, I can feel Kyiv's frustration. It's difficult when you think, Trump is kind of trending toward a tougher stance on Russia, only to do a kind of a 180, agree to this summit in Budapest in the next couple of weeks. We saw this kind of same dynamic play out in May and then in August with the Alaska summit. I am somewhat encouraged by the fact that the trend line with Trump seems to be moving toward frustration with Putin. But it's just difficult when you want these tangible policy outcomes from that, which is, tougher sanctions, more military support for Ukraine. But I think ultimately, like I said, those factors, while important, are not going to be what's decisive. What's decisive is kind of Ukraine's own defensive potential, which I think right now depends mostly on Ukrainian drone production, drone units, and then support from European countries, including through the Pearl Initiative, where they're paying for U.S. arms for Ukraine.
John Hardy of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow of the FTD. When we come back, Mr. Macron announces there'll be a meeting with Mr. Zelensky on Friday in London. Coalition of the Willing. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer. First 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.